Frank Ling.
And I'm Charles Lee.
And you're listening to the Grok Science Show.
That's right. It's a weekly look at the world of science, technology, and their effects on our daily lives. Coming up on today's program,
Tracy King will join us to discuss learning to think.
So stay tuned for all of this.
Plus the Grokatron 5000.
And our world famous question a week.
Coming right up.
Here.
On the Grok's
Science Show.
Welcome back to the Grok's Science Show. Well, as we're thrust into this world, we're faced with conflicting worldviews. Well, that is the story behind the new memoir by Ms. Tracy King, in which she describes her journeys through her childhood and beyond. Ms. King is currently a writer, producer, and science communicator based in England. She contributes to media on subjects ranging from science and technology to politics and video games in outlets such as The Guardian, BBC, Telegraph, and New European. Her new memoir is entitled Learning to Think, a memoir of faith, superstition, and the courage to ask questions. Ms. King, thanks so much for joining us today on the Grok Science Show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it is certainly a pleasure, certainly a great memoir, you've coming of age. I'm curious why you decided to put this memoir together.
It was kind of time, I think. I've had a very interesting and varied career, and I had decided to sort of focus on writing. And then a couple of years ago, my book agent said, write a book. And he said, what do you want to write? And I said, well, I kind of want to write a love letter to critical thinking and science. And he sort of, I could tell by his face, he sort of went, eh, that won't sell. So he said, well, do that, but as a memoir. Because, of course, the power of my story, I think, is how I came that love for science and critical thinking and journey and all the belief systems that I went through. So I started writing it and I thought, this isn't bad. And then 4 years later, here we are.
You found when you've discussed your story with others that it's been received.
Well, the story of learning to think opens with an exorcism. So I was exorcised when I was 12. And that's quite unusual in England. Our church, American church, and this was in the 1980s, so the church had sent missionaries over to the social housing estate, so poor people, basically, to recruit people for their church. And this worked on my family. This was the mid-1980s. And then when I was 12, my father was killed in a very sort of public and violent way. And so obviously I had all sorts of psychological problems, and the church dealt with that, as churches do, by suggesting I was possessed, and we held an exorcism. And that's quite an unusual experience to have. Having said that, since Learning to Think came out, I have been approached by quite a few people, all women, interestingly enough, all of whom were exorcised around about the same age, so 12, 13, you know, the onset of young girls misbehaving. So it's not as rare as I thought. And then the other aspects of the book, I mean, I think trauma is incredibly common. It's very rare that somebody that grew up in poverty gets to become a writer and tell their story. So I think that aspect is one of the things that I really wanted, you know, people to be able to relate to, because there are so very few sort of underclass authors out there. And then the belief systems that I went through. So following Christianity, after I left that, I got into all sorts of alternative beliefs and even conspiracy theories. I was very keen that aliens existed and had left us ancient technology and, you know, had built the pyramids and faces on Mars, all of that stuff. This was very big in the early 90s. So having had that perspective and then finding critical thinking and then eventually becoming a science communicator, you know, I think there are a lot of people who have had a similar journey. If, you know, if the exact path isn't the same, they've had a similar journey where for one reason or another, they've been looking for something, you know, answers or a belief system or a worldview, and then eventually realize they're asking the wrong questions. And in fact, you know, science is very good at asking questions, but also very good at not wanting to find the big, does God exist or did aliens do it answers, but, you know, to be satisfied with exploring the unknown in a way that's limited to the physical and the knowable. And I think that has resonated with a huge amount of people.
Finding meaning, which scientific inquiry really doesn't provide.
Yeah, I mean, one of the conclusions that I came to, not just through writing Learning to Think, but also through my many years of work in critical thinking and science communication, is that the very first thing that you need to do is to figure out why somebody needs to believe what they believe. So, for example, alternative medicine is always a very good example of that. When I was into alternative medicine, it was because I struggled to access actual medicine and I wasn't listened to. And this is something that women in particular face. I mean, in England, you know, the NHS, it's an incredible thing, but it's also very poorly funded and it's very hard to access now. So if you aren't getting access to medical care and a homeopath comes along and says, for £30, you can sit with me for an hour and I'll listen to all of your problems, you know, a cup of tea and sympathy, and I'll make you feel better, then sure, I mean, that's cheaper than therapy. So, you know, to figure out what it is that was driving my need for certain types of beliefs, I think that was the most important factor in then figuring out why I need to believe those things and then where I was going wrong, essentially. This was the 80s. So when I was 12 and my father died at school, and I went very briefly. So I had a couple of months education between the ages of 12 and 16. And when I was in school, you know, I hadn't been for such a long time that I couldn't follow anything. And I was a bright kid and I was very bookish and I was very keen on learning, but I was unable to do so in the school environment. But because I'd been brought up with a love of adventure and reading, and, you know, my father, before he died, he was an engineer and he was a real maths guy, as you would say. And he loved logic puzzles and, you know, magic tricks and that kind of thing. So I'd been instilled with this curiosity about the world and a love for learning. So 12, I sort of started to teach myself, which I don't recommend. It's, you know, I mean, it's because of the amount of wrong alleys that I went down, really. You know, when you're a kid, you believe everything you read in books. And it hadn't occurred to me that there are things in books that might not be true. So, you know, that's how I ended up getting into a lot of pseudoscience, because I thought, well, it makes me feel clever reading this stuff. You know, and I didn't know about Carl Sagan's very brilliant point about cherry picking data and how pseudoscience works. So I just thought, oh, this makes me feel clever, therefore it must be true. And that's one of the pitfalls of self-education, is that you do need a foundation, you do need some guidance and some mentoring. But I managed, I did okay. And then very luckily, I found a Carl Sagan book in a secondhand bookstore and discovered Science Exists. And then managed to correct my self-education course and do things the right way. And I've done okay out of it. So, you know, all's well that ends well.
And that book, of course, The Demon Haunted World, really was profoundly influential.
Yeah, I mean, not in a light bulb kind of religious moment. It was the opposite of that, actually. That was what made me realize you're not going to find the answer to all your problems in a book. Stop looking and instead think critically about your life and the terrible things that happened to me and why bad things happen to good people. And then, in fact, you know, if you look to the progress that's being made within science, which is it's a complicated situation now, of course, because, and this is one of the things that Sagan predicted, you know, we live in a world where science is under threat and expertise is under threat. So we need to reestablish those very basic, that if it's true, then it's testable. And, you know, it will remain true whether we believe it or not, which is something I think the world has sort of forgotten a bit, which alarms me slightly. Yeah, and it was basically just a pathway from there, because in The Demon Haunted World, he explicitly debunks the very things I'd been reading, you know, the aliens building the pyramids and all of that kind of stuff, that I realized that science is a way of thinking, that there's a philosophy to it, and that appealed to me very much. And that just put me on a pathway then to go and, you know, go off and read the right things and listen to the right people and figure out for myself. So yeah, it's not Sagan is my God. I didn't replace one belief system with another. I just realized what it was I'd been doing.
And ability to think critically about all the evidence comes out is very much missing, I think, in a lot of our discourse today. There is a lot of that cherry picking that we...
Yeah, and actually, you know, that's true of the individual. I mean, I've had a great career in critical thinking, nonetheless, you know, when I wrote my memoir, I realized that there were a lot of things about my childhood that were so painful that I hadn't gone back and examined them critically. And when I did, I discovered a huge twist in the tale. So Learning to Think has almost a murder mystery twist in it, in that I went back to examine the events of my father's death 35 years ago, and discovered that this story that I'd lived with for my entire life was not true, which is an extraordinary thing to discover. And I talk in the book a lot about why the reasons for that are. And I think that the beliefs that we hold so dearly, and that can include memories, it can include things our family tell us, things authorities tell us, the things that we need to believe are often protective. They're doing us some sort of protective service. And so, of course, we're not going to go and back and examine them under a bright light bulb and see what it is about our own traumas or our own lives that aren't true, because it's incredibly difficult. Having been through it, it was the most difficult thing I've ever done, but it's also very liberating. And I think on a wider scale, I mean, obviously governments, they have agendas, critical thinking and evidence doesn't suit them, you know, for their own agendas. There's nothing I can do about that. But for individuals, I think that everybody has things that they don't want critically, in case they turn out to be not what they've always believed, or in case they turn out to not be true. And that's very, very hard to deal with. But, you know, I'm living proof that you do deal with it, and the truth is better. And I'm very, very glad I did it, even though it turns out, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but it turns out in many respects, my father was not who I thought it was. And the young people responsible for his death were not who I thought they were. And that has changed everything. You know, that's changed my worldview. It's changed my life even. So as hard as it was to go through, you know it's cheesy, but the truth will set you free.
That very inspiring, facing those hard truths.
Yeah, I mean, it is comforting. You know, why is my life so randomly awful, for example? You know, as mine was for the first sort of 18, 19 years of my life, you know, my life was pretty terrible. Why? And, you know, and I didn't understand why, and I felt different. I felt like an alien. And so therefore, when I discovered that aliens existed and were in fact pulling all the strings behind the scenes, that I just sort of went, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's why I feel this way. Or that the government is keeping secrets from me, and actually there's a big conspiracy to keep me down, me or people like me. And you go, oh yeah, that explains it. That explains why everything's terrible and why I feel like this and why I can't get ahead. So, and there is a comfort in that, and it's a very dangerous comfort, because, you know, apart from anything, it chips away at your autonomy. Until I'd released myself from that I could actually flourish and make anything of myself, and, you know, get out of poverty and get out of the trap that I was in, which is looking for external reasons for why life was like this instead of just doing something about it.
The situation that's sort of been thrust upon you.
Yeah, I mean, I've found life that bad things will happen to you, but good things you have to make happen. And that's all very well if you have resources or energy or the ability, you know, but it's often not the case. And there have been chunks of my life where that hasn't been the case. So it's very easy to say, you know, sitting from the comfort of my home, you know, to say that all of the bad things that happen, I mean, not all of them, you know, but the majority of the bad things that happened to me were external forces that I was not in control of. And so then you start to, you know, you can get a bit of an existential crisis about, you know, consequences. And we live in an interesting period now where I think people are becoming very alive to the idea of consequences and autonomy, but without the resources to then make the good things happen. You know, economically, Britain at the moment is very depressed. You know, there's a huge housing shortage. I know the USA is facing some of these similar problems, that we have a young generation who don't see a future in the same way that my generation did, and certainly that my parents' generation did. And it's very hard to say to those people, make good things happen, that sort of American dream that I think, I mean, I know that for, I've spent a lot of time in America, but also from movies and, you know, all the literature, that it's, you know, whenever I've been in America, I've found that people are very ambitious and they're like, yes, we can do this. Whereas in Britain, it's like, oh, well, are you sure? You know, maybe we haven't got the time, or, you know, and I worry that is under threat, because if you can't see a future for yourself, you know, you can't see a clear path to get yourself to it. And so, you know, that comes down to resources, and that comes down to recognizing that people need, for me, it's education. Education is absolutely everything. Because I didn't have one, I know this. Education, we are doomed to sort of slide back, you know, to sort of pseudo dark ages, I think, and to enable people to build themselves the future that they want. You know, they need to be able to see the path that, people took historically and have the resources in the future. So, yeah, these are kind of, and I don't mean to sound depressing, because, you know, there's a lot, there's always people doing the good work. And for me, I think it was a case of, well, I'll join them. I'll go and contribute to the good work, and then maybe maybe I can lead by example, which is partly what Learning to Think is about, but partly also what my science communication work is about, which is, as a kid who didn't have access to science education, I'll make science cartoons and give them away. I feel like maybe I'm, in a tiny way, if we can all be part of the solution as well. That might be a bit too... I'm a big optimist.
What we can do, right? So
I hope so.
Looking back at one's life, question that's oftentimes asked, if you could go back, talk to your younger self, would you tell them to change anything? Is it the situation that made you who you are, or how do you view your past?
I think I'd go a bit mad if I thought too hard that way, because I'm very happy with where I am. And I don't go in for regrets much, other than to learn from, you know, the things that I definitely did wrong. And there are a great many of those things. So it's very hard, you know, my younger self was, you know, a child that was traumatized and helped in the way that she should have been. If I went back, I'd probably say, you'll be all right. But then if I'd known that, maybe I wouldn't have worked so hard to be all right. I don't know. Maybe where... SPF a bit more. That's about the only advice I think I have for my childhood self, is sort of look after yourself a bit more physically, because, I mean, and that's just good advice in general, but if you've had trauma, you know, it takes a toll on your body, so kind of look after yourself. I would say play fewer video games, but there's no way I'd have listened to that. I don't listen to that advice now, so I'm not going to listen to it back then.
That's not, play as many video games as you like. It's life worth living, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Everyone should take the SPF advice, definitely on that one. Well, look, I mean, fantastic memoir. We are running slightly out of time. You know, people picking up the book, I mean, what would you really like them to take home from your story, your message, your journey?
It's a story of many facets. It's about critical thinking, yes, and it's about the power of books, the transformative power of books. But it's also about a life of a little girl who had nothing and experienced great trauma and hardship, and came out of that with something to say. And so I think, you know, if I want any people, you know, readers to take anything away from that, it's that if they too think they might have something to say, then, you know, this might be the book for them.
Well, I certainly hope people pick it up, go take a look. And I will just close by saying we were talking with Ms. Tracy King, her new memoir, Learning to Think, a memoir of faith, superstition, and the courage to ask questions. Ms. King, thank you so much for joining us today on the Grok Science Show.
Thank you.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Grok Science Show.
Make sure you tune in next week for more from the world of science and technology.
If you'd like to contact us here, you can email us at science@groks.net. For Grok Science, I'm Frank Ling.
And I'm Charles Lee. Make sure you also see us on the web at www.groks.net. Have a great afternoon and keep on grokking.